There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the fangirl zone.
Welcome to the Marvelous Post-Split Podcast, a podcast on all things Marvel and the fangirl zone. I am Sean Fangirl-ass.
And I'm Holt Steve. Today we're talking about episode 3 of the miniseries Secret Invasion titled Betrayal, written by Kyle Bradstreet, Roxanne Paradis, and Brian Tucker, and directed by Ali Slim.
So, what were your initial reactions for this episode?
I thought it was a good episode. I was a little surprised with the ending, but not completely shocked, because it looked like Gaia was playing right into Gravik's hands, and he knew all along she was the traitor in the group, so.
Yeah, I liked it, and at the same time, I didn't like it, because it's making me, like, hate Gravik so much.
Right.
But it's like, I know that's kind of the point, too.
Yes.
But it's just one of those things. But that's what makes good actors, right? We've talked about this in a bunch of episodes.
Yes, we have.
If you hate the character, that's a really good actor. Because it's like, you know that they're not like that in real life. So kudos. Yeah, this one, though, the ending, like you said, it was like, what happened? Is this really happening? Am I seeing this? You know, it's one of those things. Like, I couldn't finish a sentence.
Yeah, I wasn't ready to have Emilia Clarke's character go halfway through the miniseries.
I feel like it's one of those that nobody's safe.
Right. Oh, absolutely not. Well, we have another in-depth recap for this episode. Fury uncovers a Rebel Skrull plot.
That was so deep.
Yes, it was.
All right. Betrayal begins with Gravik laying out to the Skrull Council the plan that becomes obvious to viewers last week in episode 2. He's trying to engineer Super Skrulls with the help of the Daltons' collected DNA sample and that giant machine. Looks like it could be a fun machine, but I'm thinking it's not.
Yeah.
And it's all so they can wipe out the dregs of humanity. That doesn't destroy themselves after being tricked into a various nuclear geopolitical conflict. There's always somebody who needs to be taken out after the fact.
Yep.
This doesn't sound great.
No.
On that note, Hagen has given Zerxu and Beto assignments. That just sounds bad, too. They're supposed to infiltrate the British Royal Navy disguised as officers and take down a key UN target. Of course, this could only end well, obviously.
Yes. Forget Russia and U.S. Let's just take out NATO, and that'll get everybody fighting.
Great.
In the meantime, though, we mustn't forget about the other bombshell reveal from the previous episode, which is that Nick Fury is married to a Skrull named Priscilla. Back in the day, though, her name was Vara. Fury met his wife while she was working on some of his undercover operatives in New York 1998 as part of a covert team that was so off the books is justified fraternization between superiors and subordinate. Team was working to take down Dracoff, the villain from Black Widow, obviously with limited success. In the present day, Celia isn't thrilled about Fury's sudden reappearance, especially not after his voluntary post-blip retirement. One of the first things Fury asks her is if she's been in contact with Gravik, and a shady phone call implies that if she hasn't, she has at least been in contact with somebody she'd rather Fury not know about.
There's also a small matter of Gaia's allegiances to attend to. Last week, Gaia tipped off the police about the location of Gravik's safe house, which he softly confronts her about. She blames Brogan, claiming he made the educated guess under torture, and while Gravik obviously doesn't believe her, he lets it go. Gaia isn't very good at playing double agent, though.
No.
While Gravik takes her to a parlay that Talos called via Shirley, she texts crucial information about the UN attacks, seemingly not sparing a thought for the obviousness of just blindly repeating information she's overheard. Yeah, I feel like that was a total setup, but...
Yep.
Especially with Gravik already being suspicious of her. It's the oldest trick in the book, to plant incorrect information and to see who it gets repeated to. The parlay is an interesting scene. I think people will be mixed on Gravik, whose annoyance at World War I era paintings recalled Killmonger's frustration with museums being stocked with pilfered, misrepresented artifacts in Black Panther. He's a radical who believes firmly that he is in the right, which all good villains necessarily must believe this, but he's verging on overacting here.
Yeah.
Gravik also has an entire cafe filled with disguised Skrulls, which makes for a nice visual when Talos lunges at him, but none of them intervene when Talos skewers Gravik's hand on the table with a butter knife. They just all become Gravik.
Right.
Which I thought they were supposed to be able to tell their own. Or did Talos just, like, not care that they were all Skrulls?
I guess he didn't care. Okay. I'm not sure why, because, you know, when they all got up, it's kind of like, you're outnumbered, Talos, so you better just sit down and be a good boy.
It's almost like they're just for the shot of them all shapeshifting into Gravik, I guess.
Right.
It does make a nice screenshot, but very little drama seemed to come from it. On his way out, the parlay was entirely unsuccessful, in case you didn't figure that part out. Talos bumps into someone who hands him a burner phone. We think it's Gaia, because it just seemed that way, unless there was another useful Skrull in the area.
Right.
And information was typed out about the submarine Neptune, from which Gravik's plan was to launch his attack on the UN from. So, I don't know. I think it was Gaia. Do you think it was Gaia? Like, I feel like it was Gaia's phone.
I don't think it was Gaia, but Gaia was supposed to be there somewhere.
Yeah, I thought she was supposed to be in the car, like, across the street. So that's why.
Right,
It just seemed to make sense that that was Gaia, at least to me.
Yeah, I think it's the phone was Gaia's.
Okay.
Now, since Neptune is a British sub, Fury, after making amends with Talos, calls Sonya Fallsworth, who gives him the name of the sub's commander, Robert Fairbank, a diehard Gravik loyalist who won't give up the abort code for the submarine, even after Fury and Talos hold him at gunpoint.
I'm wondering if he even knew it.
I think Talos probably did. When he taunts Talos about Gaia, though, Talos shoots him dead and turns to Gaia herself for the code. This obviously means blowing her cover in New Skrullio. She retrieves the abort code from the real Bob, and the launch is averted. And damn, I wish I would have seen a few more people that they had in there, like Rhodey and maybe Maria Hill.
Yeah, but maybe they're not there. Maybe they're in a different location.
Could be. But when Gaia tries to make her escape, Gravik is waiting for her. The whole thing was obviously intended to root out the traitor. In a surprising turn, Gravik shoots Gaia dead. The episode ends with Celia retrieving a gun from a safety deposit box. She's instructed by the voice of Rhodey, who is apparently a Skrull, to head to a certain location at a certain time. But when she asks to speak to Gravik, her request is denied.
Okay, I did not catch that was Rhodey's voice right away.
Yeah.
I didn't catch it until probably the rewatch.
Right.
And I was like, oh, great. And I am really surprised Gravik shot Gaia, although he was like, turn around. She's like, no, shoot me in the front. Look at me.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're going to make him look you in the eyes, but it didn't stop him.
No, it didn't. Now, of course, we do see that Gravik just pulls his hand off the table and just rips through his hand, and then his extremist abilities heal him. So you go, this is not good.
No, I'm thinking this is going to turn very bad, very fast.
Yeah. Yeah. We get into some Easter eggs.
We have Easter eggs. We always have Easter eggs. And I'm so happy for those people who are out there, along with Steve, who searched through them, because there's always something extra we're managed to like find, because so many people look through these, because I don't know how everybody does it. I will tell you that right now.
Right.
If it's not obvious, I'm not seeing it apparently lately. So episode 3 opens with Gravik and his band of Skrulls furthering their attempts to conquer the Earth. The scene sets up an episode core plot of nuclear attack, since it does not affect the Skrulls. I feel like that's very scary, too.
Yes.
So this attack is planned on the United Nations while also shedding more light on Gravik's plans to combat the inevitable conflict the Skrulls foresee with the Avengers. They keep mentioning them.
Yep.
Gravik invites the Skrull Council, revealed to be high-ranking members of various governments, by the time Secret Invasion Episode 2 has ended, to view the machine that utilizes the aforementioned DNA samples collected by the Skrulls. Braddock reveals that in order to combat the eventual interference of Earth's heroes after their invasion becomes public, the Skrulls will use this machine to imbue themselves with power. Stolen power.
Yeah.
While many assumed this was the case after Episode 2, Episode 3 features the first official mention of Super Skrull. Braddock mentions that the Skrulls will become super themselves before name-dropping the super-powered version of the green aliens from the Marvel comic. So, something actually pulled from the comic again.
Right.
While not an overt Easter egg, Braddock's plan to create Super Skrulls links to Vision's words from Captain America: Civil War. In the 2016 film, Vision gave his reasoning behind siding with Tony Stark on the debate of the Sokovia Accord. Vision states that the strength of the Earth's heroes continued to grow back in 2016 and implies that this strength was what was inciting others to become stronger themselves, thus brewing the many conflicts seen on Earth during the Infinity Saga. As a result, Vision sided with Stark as he believed the government oversight could reduce the conflict the heroes naturally bring to Earth. No.
No.
These words are proven to be true with Gravik in Episode 3, but are they true, really?
Yeah.
I feel like Gravik was just in a bad way. I don't know.
Yeah.
He was going to find any reason. Didn't matter. Gravik realizes the strength of the Avengers, which is the main catalyst for his Super Skrull experiment in Secret Invasion. This links to Vision's words, as the power of the Avengers is causing Gravik to bolster the power of the Skrulls, inciting the conflict that will undoubtedly become Super Skrulls in the future. I mean, that sounds so funky when I said it. I don't know. Super Skrulls. It sounds like it's like a bunch of good guys, but you know that right now it's not.
No.
While Episode 3 does not directly reference Captain America: Civil War, the words of Vision are an interesting Easter egg to keep in mind as to why Gravik's uprising seems to be growing from covert infiltration to super-powered terrorism. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, it essentially is.
Yes, it is. Much like Episode 2 before it, Episode 3 featured flashbacks to the 1990s. The flashbacks centered on Fury's budding relationship with Vara, the Skrull revealed to be his wife in the present storyline. Vara was revealed to be part of Fury's Skrull division that he established after Captain Marvel, which provided him with information to protect Earth while he and Carol Danvers found them a home. Flashback shows a meeting between Vara and Fury, with the former providing the latter with some vital information that references another section of the MCU. After presenting Fury with a brown envelope, Vara remarked, "This should put Dracoff's men on their heels." Dracoff is the head of the Red Room and the villain of the Black Widow movie. Given the former conflicts between Natasha Romanoff and Dracoff, the Easter egg to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s conflict with the Red Room is a neat way of connecting Secret Invasion's self-contained story to former MCU events.
I forgot about Dracoff. Because I've only watched Black Widow once so far.
Right.
So it's one of those, like, it hasn't been on where it's on almost every weekend or something.
Right.
So it's hard to remember all the bad guys.
Yes. In Episode 2, Gaia views the DNA samples acquired by Gravik Skrulls, one of which was a sample of an extremist soldier. Extremist was the form of genetic mutation implored by Iron Man 3 by AIM, which imbued soldiers with fire-based power that allowed them to regenerate from injuries and become stronger. This hint in Episode 2 came to fruition in Episode 3 with the reveal that Gravik is already a Super Skrull and contains the powers of Extremis himself. During a conversation with Talos, Gravik mentions Gaia, prompting the former to impale the latter with a knife. After Talos leaves, Gravik simply pulls his hand free from the blade before his Extremis powers kick in and allow him to heal his wound. While Episode 2 hinted at Extremis powers being part of Episode 3, that showed them in action and an Easter egg to how they were visually portrayed in Iron Man 3 with the same orange glow and healing effects.
I am starting to wonder, because nobody else acted, how many people have actually been changed to Super Skrulls, or it's basically right now just Gravik?
I'm thinking probably right now it's just Gravik.
So he's like, look what I can do. And then maybe he'll share that power. I mean, if he wants to make them, we'll see what happens, but I mean, we're halfway through the season at this point.
Right.
So we'll see. But we have more Easter eggs. One of the smaller Easter eggs in episode 3 comes from before Talos and Fury's mission during the episode's climax. The two are shown talking in the car on the way to their location, with Talos referencing Fury's career as a spy from the MCU's past. Talos confirms that the only reason Fury rose through the ranks was because of the Skrulls and the information they fed him, also linking to the mention of Dracov earlier in the episode. The reference recontextualizes Fury's power in the MCU, as the Easter egg hint that most of Fury's covert information came from the Skrulls themselves. I feel like that does change a lot of stuff. Totally skews it.
Yes, it does. Yeah, that puts Fury in a much different light than the way everybody thought about him prior to this, at least.
Yes, because throughout the MCU, we've seen him hold all the cards.
Right.
And so this is like, oh, he wasn't the one actually holding all the cards. He was being fed it all.
Yeah.
So that just makes me like kind of tilt my head and watch like, okay, now I got to change thoughts here.
Yes.
But going back to Captain Marvel, something continuously brought up for how Nick Fury could determine a Skrull was whether they called him Fury or not. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Throughout Captain Marvel, something continually brought up for how Nick Fury could determine a Skrull was whether they called him Fury or not.
Right.
In the 2019 film, Fury revealed to Carol that nobody calls him Nicholas or Nick, simply Fury. In episode 3, a Skrull imitates Talos, causing him to call Fury by his first name, Nick. This stirs Fury's suspicion, allowing him to get the upper hand and free Talos as nobody calls me Nick, Bob. This is not only a neat Easter egg to Captain Marvel, but it also used similarly as it helped Fury determine a Skrull infiltrator. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
I was just thinking it was Talos, but if any of them call him Nick, that's interesting.
Right.
But we've seen throughout, like when he's on site, you hear Fury's here.
Right.
So have they all picked it up then, except a few poor souls that are going to get knocked out?
Possibly.
At the end of episode 3, it's revealed that Fury's wife is working for Gravik, which made me sad.
Yep.
Bara called someone asking to speak to Gravik, with the voice on the other end being a subtle Easter egg episode 2 theory. I think I had said it was totally backwards when we talked about it last episode.
Right.
I was thinking Rhodey was Rhodey and the rest of them were Skrulls, I believe, is what I said.
Yeah.
But nope. You probably had it right. The theory in question was Secret Invasion Rhodes was a Skrull, something that episode 3 seemingly confirms, as the voice on the phone seems to be Rhodey himself. The episode does not confirm this, solidifying Rhodey's voice as an MCU Easter egg, which will likely lead to a big reveal and confrontation between Fury and Rhodes in Secret Invasion's future.
Absolutely, it will. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com. Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are plenty of other Marvel podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and we do hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
You can go to www.fangirlzone.com and check out our website and all of the podcasts. We have many, many podcasts, as well as the contact page that has all the ways to get a hold of us, because there are many, many contacts over there, too. We love to hear from you. We want to answer any questions you have, tinfoil hat theories, anything. And as con season goes throughout the year, you may see us walking around your local con. And please come up and talk to us, because we will be in our jerseys and happy to talk to you about any of the shows that you're watching. So for this episode of the Marvelous Post-Blip Podcast,
I'm Hulk Steve. Nobody calls me Nick, Bob.
And I'm Sean Fangirl S. And until next time.